This is Stan Bennett in Washington, D.C. Today on Jay Sekulow Live, President Trump's legal defense team begins their case in the United States Senate.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
Disagreeing with the president's decision on foreign policy matters or whose advice he's going to take is in no way an impeachable offense.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
While Adam Schiff did a good job of presenting the facts and at times the law, when it came to removing the president, he's got to go right now, it was more of an audition for a future Senate run than it was compelling. But what happened yesterday? In 2 hours, the Senate, the president's defense team destroyed the narrative created in 21 hours regarding process and substance.
And now your host, Stan Bennett.
Hey everyone, welcome into Jay Sekulow Live. I'm Stan Bennett coming to you from Washington, D.C., joined by Professor Harry Hutchison and Colonel retired Wes Smith. Folks, the last time we were with you on Friday, the House managers were preparing to present their final day of presentations to the United States Senate. They did that. I think it went mostly as you would expect until maybe the last 10 minutes. I think Chairman Schiff may have made yet another tactical error, but I'm not going to start with that, folks. I do want to play that for you at some point, but that is not the proper place to start today's show. I think the proper place to start today's show has to do with a proverb that I referenced earlier in the week, and that is that in a lawsuit, the first to speak seems right until someone comes forward and cross-examines. Folks, on Saturday, we had a cross-examination. First of all, I'm not quite sure that the House managers convinced the United States Senate. In fact, I'm pretty sure they did not make their case to the extent where they were anywhere close to the 67 votes it would take to convict and remove the president. But on Saturday, folks, the president's legal defense team had their opportunity to present a cross-examination. You heard some of that sound in the open, but I'm going to begin today's show by playing you just a little bit of audio from our chief counsel acting in his private capacity, ACLJ chief counsel Jay Sekulow. Just a little note here. We may also be joined by our executive director, Jordan Sekulow, to give us a brief update. He's been able to do that on a regular basis. He hopes to again today. Hopefully we'll have him after this segment. But I want to begin today's show. Audio from Saturday morning from our chief counsel, Jay Sekulow, cross-examining this case that was brought by House managers. This is from the floor of the United States Senate on Saturday, bite two.
In his summation on Thursday night, Manager Schiff complained that the president chose not to go with the determination of his intelligence agencies regarding foreign interference and instead decided that he would listen to people that he trusted and he would inquire about the Ukraine issue himself. Mr. Schiff did not like the fact that the president did not apparently blindly trust some of the advice he was being given by the intelligence agencies. First of all, let me be clear. Disagreeing with the president's decision on foreign policy matters or whose advice he's going to take is in no way an impeachable offense.
Disagreeing with the president's decision in a foreign policy matter is in no way an impeachable offense. And yet, folks, that constitutes the entirety of the first article brought by House managers against President Trump, abuse of power. It essentially amounts to a policy dispute. Therefore, the opening salvo from our chief counsel was exactly on that point. A policy dispute, especially in the terms of foreign relations, is not an impeachable offense. Of course, Article 2 was obstruction of Congress. They also addressed that on the floor of the United States Senate. Here's what we're going to do today, folks. We are going to give you an update on the 2 hours of defense that was put forward by the president's legal team. Look, I don't think it's going to take anywhere near the 24 hours. In fact, that's what Pat Cipollone said. There's not much of a case that was made to you. It will not take us the entirety of our 24 hours to refute it. They used 2 hours on Saturday. They will be back in session here in just moments, starting at 1 o'clock Eastern time, to continue presenting the president's case. We will lay out what's ahead, what to expect. But most of all, folks, we're going to play more sound from Saturday's session in front of the United States Senate. The cross-examination has started, and in my view, the underlying case has already begun to fall apart. I think you will agree when we play these sound. We'll be back after this. Professor Hutchison, Colonel Smith will be brought into the conversation back after this break.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. We are breaking down the session that occurred on Saturday in the United States Senate. This was day one of the President's Legal Defense Team's presentation to the United States Senate. The United States Senate reached consent, folks, to come into session a little bit early at 10 o'clock and to have a truncated version. And it ended up being just over 2 hours for the President's team to start presenting their case. Now, they still get a total of up to 24 hours, and they can use up to 3 session days. So they still have approximately 22 hours remaining, and they can divide that between today and tomorrow. And remember, a session day does not end at midnight. So you could conceivably continue on into the early hours of the morning, and that would all be on a continuous session day. We will have to see how much time they consume and maybe if any is yielded back. Remember, earlier in the week, we saw that some of these time parameters that we talk about can get extended when both sides were offered a third day to present their case. They can also shrink if anybody would turn back time. And by the way, that would include when the senators are up for their 16 hours of questioning. They don't have to use it all, but they are allowed up to that maximum amount of time. I do want to play some more sound from the Senate floor, but first I want to bring in Colonel retired Wes Smith into the conversation. Colonel, I'm just interested in getting your top line takeaways from Saturday's session. It was brief. You heard 4 presentations from the House, from the president's attorneys, but rebutting the House manager's case. And in my book, in just about 2 hours, you had about 23 hours of a case that was really undermined. What were some of the top line takeaways for you?
Yeah, you know, the Democrat managers, whenever they were presenting their case that seemed to go on ad infinitum, like eternally, they kept repeating themselves, the same information over and over, because there are so many holes in their arguments, thus the repetition. And what you saw Saturday was the president's defense team very calmly, very methodically going through and taking apart those arguments one by one. And because there was so much repetition in what the Democrats had presented in almost 24 hours, it was interesting to watch Jay and Cipollone take that apart step by step and to do it in less than 3 hours. And you're right what you said earlier, Than. This basically is an attempt to impeach a president over policy disagreements. You know, failing to note the obvious, and that is a president sets his or her own foreign policy as their prerogative. And what's also notable, in what the Democrats have charged and how that Jay and the others are taking them to task and taking it apart, is part of the Democrats' charge that not just what the president said or did is wrong, but somehow or another he did these things for, quote, corrupt purposes. They actually deigned to know what President Trump was thinking and feeling at any given time while he is exercising his Article II powers as president, whether it's, you know, tying aid to cleaning up corruption or recalling an ambassador or whatever. It's an amazing thing. It was an amazing thing to watch what the Dems said last week, but I think even more amazing, and it will be this afternoon as well, to watch his defense counsel very calmly, very methodically, simply lay out the facts.
The House managers also give an awful lot of deference to the unelected bureaucrats. They rely on the bureaucracy that makes a certain assessment or has a certain political view or makes a certain certification, forgetting the fact that Article II very clearly gives that power to make decisions on statutorily granted authorities to the President of the United States. Shirley on Facebook wrote in and she said, in 2 hours, they destroyed Schiff and Company's case. I couldn't agree more. I think that is exactly what happened. But look, I want to play this sound directly for you. For those of you who are not able to watch on Saturday, I want to give you some of the key takeaways. And I want to start with where our chief counsel, Jay Sekulow, started off. This is going to be bite one, talking about the context in which these impeachment proceedings began. You can't look at these things in a vacuum. If you're going to try to get into the mind of the president, which, look, is probably not appropriate for House managers to do, but if you're going to do that, you need to understand the context in which he's making decisions and who he might be trusting. So Jay started off with this right off the bat. This is a little bit lengthy, but I think it's important for each of you to hear. This is Bite One, Jay Sekulow, our chief counsel.
Let me begin by saying that you cannot simply decide this case in a vacuum. Mr. Schiff said yesterday, I believe it was his father who said, you should put yourself in someone else's shoes. Let's for a moment put ourselves in the shoes of the President of the United States right now. Before he was sworn into office, he was subjected to an investigation by the Federal Bureau of Investigation called Crossfire Hurricane. The president, within 6 months of his inauguration, found a special counsel being appointed to investigate a Russia collusion theory. In their opening statement, several members of the House managers tried to once again relitigate the Mueller case. Here's the bottom line. This is part one of the Mueller report. This part alone is 199 pages. The House managers in their presentation a couple of times referenced this for that. Let me tell you something. This cost $32 million. This investigation took 2,800 subpoenas. This investigation had 500 search warrants. This had 230 orders for communication records. This had 500 witness interviews. All to reach the following conclusion, and I'm going to quote from the Mueller report itself. It can be found on page 173. As it relates to this whole matter of collusion and conspiracy, ultimately, these are the words of Bob Mueller in his report, this investigation did not establish that the campaign coordinated or conspired with the Russian government in its election interference activities. Let me say that again. This, the Mueller report, resulted in this. That for this. Ultimately, the investigation did not establish that the campaign coordinated or conspired with the Russian government in its election-related interference activities. This for that.
this for that, folks. Look, you cannot analyze this in a vacuum. You have to look at the context in which the president of the United States, the person that the American people chose to make these decisions, was looking to combat corruption around the world. You have to look at it in context. That's why Jay started it off with that discussion. We're going to be joined here very shortly by our executive director, Jordan Sekulow, who's been on the floor of the United States Senate. I'm sure many of you have seen him there. I'm sure you've seen him on the media breaking down the case that the president's team is making. He's going to give us an update on what the team is doing to prepare, maybe a glimpse at what is ahead. And folks, I'm interested to see what he has to say about the tenor in the room as the House managers were wrapping up their case. I think it probably pivoted quite a bit when the president's legal defense team took the floor. I think maybe it actually pivoted just shortly before they took the floor, because I think the House managers overreached as they were trying to anticipate what the president's legal team would argue in the closing minutes of Chairman Schiff's arguments. He actually said that the GOP senators were being threatened by the president of the United States. And we're talking about a situation where those senators are supposed to sit quietly. There are stiff penalties if they don't. That assertion got an audible reaction, even as I was watching on TV. I think it was a fundamental mistake from Chairman Schiff. I think that is when the tenor started to change. But certainly when Pat Cipollone, the White House chief counsel, took to the floor, certainly when Jay took to the floor, certainly when Michael Papuro and Patrick Philbin took to the floor, the tenor changed dramatically. So if we're able to get Jordan here in just a minute, maybe after this break, I want to ask him about that. But Professor Hutchison, let me maybe quickly go to you as we close out the broadcast. I think in the closing comments from Chairman Schiff, he actually pivoted the sense on the floor of the Senate, maybe even before the president's legal defense team even got to the well.
I think you're precisely correct. I think the House managers have massively overreached. Recall the House managers engaged in massive ad nauseum repetition. Recall as well that they explicitly attacked Republicans, and that they claimed that the Republican senators' heads would be on a pike. And so I think they overreached, they offended Republican senators, and they even managed to offend Democrats. So that reflects massive incompetence on the part of the House managers.
Folks, when we get back from this break, hope to have an update from our executive director, Jordan Sekulow, about the president's preparation, about the day ahead. And folks, we're also going to talk about an order from the FISA court. This is something that Jay addressed on the floor of the United States Senate. We've said it from the beginning. The process was flawed. And folks, it's also part of the context that we go into this impeachment proceeding. Stay with us after this break. Hopefully we'll be joined by Jordan Sekulow.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line: we could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. Than Bennett coming to you from Washington, D.C. We hope to be joined in just a few moments here by Jordan Sekulow, Executive Director of the ACLJ and a member of President Trump's legal defense team. If you were with us through the break, you saw a video of Jay Sekulow on the floor of the United States Senate talking about a recent order from the FISA court, from the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. This is an issue that we've been front and center on at the ACLJ for a long time, and it goes to the context in which we approach these impeachment proceedings. Jay used it to set up. No wonder the president was questioning where he got information. No wonder he was reaching out to people that he trusted to get information on these issues. In just a minute here, I'm going to play for you the full sound of Jay's comments on this issue. But quickly, as we also look to be joined by Jordan Sekulow, I wanted to go to Colonel Smith. And Colonel, because of your background in the military and in the intelligence world, this was a scathing order that was put out by the FISA court on January 7th, essentially invalidating or saying that two of the four warrants that were issued against Carter Page were not valid and that all four of them were going to be under further review. A scathing and unprecedented, at least in my view, unprecedented order from the FISA court.
Yeah, and you take it back then. We've got Jordan.
All right, Colonel Smith, I'm going to pull it back from you just a minute. We are joined now by our executive director, Jordan Sekulow. Jordan, thank you for joining us today. And maybe we'll just start with this. I'll open the floor to whatever update you want to give us. But in my view, as I watched these proceedings on Saturday, I thought the tenor shifted at the very end of Chairman Schiff's presentation. It certainly shifted on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's always going to be new information leaking and things like that. But, you know, today we've got a great team, a great lineup, and I just want you, all the listeners, to know they will see my dad start off the proceedings today. So tune in right after the radio broadcast, 1 p.m. Eastern time. He'll be starting it off, and then we're going to have some great constitutional law scholars and attorneys, some from White House counsel, some from the president's legal team, and some of those newer members of the team that the media has discussed as well. So I think that this is going to be a pretty exciting day. Since really we only went for a couple hours on Saturday, for those who really care about this issue and care about the defense of the president. So I just want everybody to tune in, and we appreciate, of course, everybody's prayers as we are there. You know, I'm right outside the Senate chamber right now as we prepare for this. So we just appreciate all of your prayers out there. Be praying for us. Be praying for the White House team, and be praying for everybody who's working behind the scenes on this and who's going to be speaking today. Just pray for everybody. And we're doing the right thing for the right president.
Really appreciate it, Jordan. I know time is short for you, so we appreciate you joining us for just a couple of minutes.
Let me just tell everybody, you know, people always wonder, like, is it over today? Is it over tomorrow? You know, we can't predict that right now. So I just want to say it on our show first that there was a lot of talk that we're going to be done on Monday. That's it, and that's just discussions of, you know, media tries to put it in the news. The truth is we're going to put on the full defense of the president today. Remember, yes, Saturday was just a preview. It was just a preview. So tune in for as much as you can today. And certainly places like C-SPAN later in the day, they're good places to go if you want to watch all. But I got to go, fan. But pray for us, everybody, please. Thank you.
Certainly. Thanks, Jordan. Appreciate a couple minutes of your time, folks. I said it every day that Jordan has been able to join us. We're certainly grateful for that. I don't think you're going to get that anywhere else in the world. A member of the president's legal defense team bringing you an update just before they take the floor of the United States Senate. Again, a couple of things that Jordan said that I think is news. First of all, it looks like Jay Sekulow, our chief counsel, acting in his private capacity, is going to be first up out of the gates, according to Jordan, today when the Senate resumes its session at 1 o'clock. So that is certainly news. The other thing I've seen the same reports that Jordan referenced, that there is for sure going to be a wrap to the president's case today. I think you heard it from Jordan. They are reserving every right to take the full amount of time if they need it. They have about 22 hours remaining. training over today and tomorrow. I think you also heard Jordan allude to the fact that they thought that the 2 hours that they used on Saturday made a pretty comprehensive rebuttal to the 23 hours that was presented by House managers. I think the White House Chief Counsel's Pat Cipollone's comments that they would be respectful and brief to the extent they wouldn't be laborious or repetitive if not needed. So maybe they will wrap early, but I think the president's team is making the right decision to leave all options on the table. Wes, I want to come back to you. We were having a conversation just before we were fortunate enough to be joined by Jordan, but we were talking about this issue of the FISA court issuing this order. You know, there of course are intervening events during a trial, but this was not an intervening event, Wes. The order might have been, but this dated back to the very origins of all of these inquiries into President Trump and really undermined some of the very foundation that the president's enemies were using to come after the president.
Yeah, absolutely. And all of this started even before he was inaugurated as president and then continued after he became president. And when you look at all the things going on with the FISA courts, you know, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, you know, has been under the microscope anyway, you know, and it's certainly, you know, there are many who have called for it to be abolished, to be repealed. Others are saying it definitely needs to be reviewed and modified. But coming out of this whole issue, you have the misinformation and the misleading of that court by the Intel Division of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And though that is established fact, that actually happened. And then you look at the Intel community writ large, you look at the National Security Council and what's been going on since the president was inaugurated, and even recently, there is obvious bias in the Intel community. There is obvious, you know, misinformation, unauthorized leaks. And so it's certainly reasonable that when the intel community gives the president advice, he needs to question them, to ask them hard questions. And at the end of the day, Jordan, here's the deal. And there is a real problem, seriously, in the intel community and certainly with the FISA court system. But at the end of the day, the intel community functions in an advisory capacity to the president. They do not set policy. They advise the president, and it's certainly, you know, his prerogative to take the information that is given him, to weigh it out, and to make decisions as the executive, because that's who he is.
And in the case of the FISA court, Wes, it is not adversarial. So no. Those presenting the case have a fundamental and sacred obligation to present all sides of the case. Carter Page didn't get to be present in this courtroom. It was the obligation of the government attorneys to put this information forward. They failed in that duty, in my view. That's why Jay referenced it. Folks, I actually, later in the broadcast, I'm going to play for you a longer soundbite of Jay walking through this particular FISA order. I don't have time in this broadcast for a very good reason. We were joined by Jordan Sekulow, our executive director, a member of the president's legal team, to give us an update from the floor. So that is certainly a good thing. Let me give you a quick look ahead. Today, in just minutes, the United States Senate is going to come back into session. The president's team will still be up. They will begin their first full day of presentation to the United States Senate. Jordan indicated that Jay would be first out of the box to make a presentation. So you're definitely going to want to tune into that. Then they will have the right to return tomorrow to finish their 24 hours up to 24 hours of arguments. After that, folks, probably 2 days, up to 16 hours of floor time for senators to ask questions. And then later in the week, we move into motions. This is something that you'll hear a lot about, but that's going to be later in the week. For now, for today, look for a 1 p.m. start time for the United States Senate with Jay Sekulow first out of the box making the president's case. I just wanted to say to Jordan, Judy on Facebook wrote in, she said, praying for your team as you fight for our country. Folks, as you watch these proceedings, I think you're glad that Jay and Jordan are where they are. We're grateful for a few minutes of Jordan's time today. We'll bring more after this break. Stay with us.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
Freedom.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now your host, Than Bennett.
Everyone, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. I am Than Bennett coming to you from Washington, D.C. I'm going to get Professor Hutchison into this conversation again in here in just a minute, but I did want to go to a call that is coming in on line four from Rhode Island. It's Jerry. Jerry, I think you make a good point about how this defense for the president may not need to be as extended as the House manager's case was, but welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hello, team. To answer your question, Professor Hutchison said last week, trial adversary. After 24 hours of hearing what we heard, we just heard Jay give an example of what every trial ad person in the law school is going to do in the future. Less is more. And to Colonel West, as he was commenting, I thought about what was on Harry Truman's desk. The buck stops here.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jerry, and I'll go to Professor Hutchison on this. I think in many cases, less can be more. I thought in 2 hours on Saturday, the case was completely dismantled. Now, I do think it's good today, as you heard from Jordan, that they're going to go through in greater detail and set the record straight. There was a lot of partial record established, Professor, and I think the president's team will take greater length to fill that in. But I don't think they're going to feel the need for as much repetition as we heard from Chairman Schiff and the rest of the managers. To a large extent, I do agree with Jerry. When the facts are on your side, less is more.
I think that is correct. So offering a compact, concentrated case, I think, is much more effective. Actually, people can remember your argument. And that's one of the problems with the House manager's case. They kept repeating themselves as if they did not have an argument to bring. So let's just keep showing the same tape, the same video, the same witnesses, which underscores the weakness of their case. So I thought the presentation by the president's defense team on Saturday was to the point. It was concentrated. It respected the senator's time, and I think it was highly persuasive.
Folks, I want to play a little bit of sound to you from the White House counsel as well, Pat Cipollone, talking about how the impact of this will be on our elections. This is Byte 3, White House counsel Pat Cipollone.
If you were really interested in finding out the truth, why would you run a process the way they ran? If you were really confident in your position on the facts, why would you lock everybody out of it from the president's side? Why would you do that? We will talk about the process arguments, but the process arguments also are compelling evidence on the merits, because it's evidence that they themselves don't believe in the facts of their case. And the fact that they came here for 24 hours and hid evidence from you is further evidence that they don't really believe in the facts of their case. That this is, for all their talk about election interference, that they're here to perpetrate the most massive interference in an election in American history, and we can't allow that to happen. It would violate our Constitution. It would violate our history. It would violate our obligations to the future. And most importantly, it would violate the sacred trust that the American people have placed in you and have placed in them. The American people decide elections. They have one coming up in 9 months.
I'm so glad the White House counsel mentioned this, because remember, Chairman Schiff said this could not be left to the ballot box. Folks, we're 9 months away from a general election. We are 1 week away from the first primary caucus in the election for president of the United States. The power should stay with the people. The power is rightfully belongs to the people. So I think it was very important for the White House counsel to bring up this point. That's why I wanted to play it for you. We're going to play more sound for you from Jay after this break. We'll be right back on Jay Sekulow Live.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live, everyone. I've been promising you now for a couple of segments that I was going to play a little bit of sound that's a little bit extended. It's about 3 minutes long of Jay Sekulow on the floor of the United States Senate addressing this issue of the order that was put out on January 7th by the FISA court, or there's unclassified by the FISA court. Really shocking stuff here, folks. I'm going to read for you just one line from it. I'll tell you, in essence, what they did is they said that two of the four warrants that were granted for surveillance of Carter Page were invalid. But here's what they said. And by the way, they said they were going to look at all four of them. There were cause for concern on all four of them. But listen to this line. It says, DOJ assesses that, In reference to two docket numbers, which are two of the warrants, DOJ assesses that there was insufficient predication to establish probable cause to believe that Carter Page was acting as an agent of a foreign power. Folks, what that means is that the Department of Justice has now concluded, based on what they have seen from the FISA court, that two of those four surveillance orders on Carter Page of the Trump campaign and the Trump administration were invalid. Folks, that is a stunning order from the FISA court, and it informs how we look at the case that was presented to the United States Senate by the House managers. It's why Jay included it in his opening presentation. I think he spoke for about 45 minutes, but he took several minutes to explain why this is important to the underlying case. Again, this is a little bit lengthy. It's about 3 minutes long, but I think it's very, very critical for you to hear it. So I want to play it. This is Bite 3, Jay Sekulow on the floor of the United States Senate.
Mr. Schiff and Mr. Nadler, of all people, because they chair significant committees, really should know this, and they should know what's happened. Let me remind you of something. Just 0.6 miles from this chamber sits the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, also known as the FISA Court. It is the federal court established and authorized under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act to oversee requests by federal agencies for surveillance orders against foreign spies inside the United States, including American citizens. Because of the sensitive nature of its business, the court is a more secret court. Its hearings are closed to the public. In this court, there are no defense counsel, no opportunity to cross-examine witnesses, and no ability to test evidence. The only material that the court ever sees are those materials that are submitted on trust, by members of the intelligence community, with the presumption that they would be acting in good faith. On December 17th, 2019, the FISA court issued a scathing order in response to the Justice Department Inspector General's report on FBI's Crossfire Hurricane investigation into whether or not the Trump campaign was coordinating with Russia. We already know the conclusion. That report detailed the FBI's pattern and practice, systematic abuses of obtaining surveillance order requests and the process they utilize. In its order, and this is the order from the court, I'm going to read it. This order responds to reports that personnel of the Federal Bureau of Investigation provided false information to the National Security Division of the Department of Justice and withheld material information from the NSD, which was detrimental to the FBI's case in connection with four applications to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. When the FBI personnel misled NSD in the ways that are described in these reports, they equally misled the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. This order has been followed up. There's been another order. It was declassified just a couple of days ago. Thanks in large part, the court said, to the Office of Inspector General's U.S. Department of Justice, the court has received notice of material misstatements and omissions in applications filed by the government in the above-captioned documents. DOJ assesses that with respect to the applications, and it lists two specific docket numbers, 17375 and 17679, if not earlier, there was insufficient predication to establish probable cause to believe that Carter Page was acting as an agent of a foreign power. The president had reason to be concerned about the information he was being provided. Now, we could ignore this. We could make believe this did not happen. But it did.
I want to go to Professor Hutchison on this because, Harry, I find this order to be breathtaking. I was glad that Jay brought it up on the floor of the Senate. I want to remind folks, before I pitch it to you, what we're talking about here. We are talking about government attorneys going before a secret court. It was set up to not be adversarial for national security reasons, so Carter Page did not have an opportunity to present a case. And not only did they not present all of the information, Harry, but they misled the court. They used information that they knew they could not verify, and they passed it off to the court as if they could. Jay refrained from saying they lied to the court. He said they misled the court. I think that was the gentlemanly thing to do. But I think saying they lied to the court would also be a fair presentation. And again, Harry, not a trivial matter. The court issued a warrant and then allowed an American citizen to be spied upon, to be surveilled based on that information.
Your analysis is spot on. So what we have is insufficient predication to establish that Carter Page was a foreign agent. What does that mean? It means he was not a foreign agent, and that the FBI essentially lied to the FISA court in order to gain a warrant. They did so. Why? Because they wanted to spy on the Trump campaign. So you take all of this evidence together, it means that the FBI, that the intel community engaged in a violation of the United States Constitution, specifically the Fourth Amendment. In other words, you cannot engage in spying. You cannot engage in search and seizure without probable cause that meets the constitutional standard. Here, compliance with the constitutional standard was absolutely absent. Given all of that, given this history, why would President Trump rely blindly on the intel community? No rational person subjected to this misconduct by the intel community, including the FBI, would rely blindly on what they tell him or tell us. So I think it's clear beyond question that President Trump had a right to be suspicious of any claims made by the intelligence community, no matter whether or not there was a consensus of all of the intel agencies. It would defy rational sense to rely on the FBI and such agencies. And therefore, the President of the United States would want to make sure that when he dealt with Ukrainian officials, that to the extent that there were Americans who might have been involved in wrongdoing, that the Ukrainians may consider investigating those individuals.
No doubt about it, Harry. And there are a couple other sound bites, folks, that I want to play for you in the next segment of the broadcast, talking about the White House meeting that Chairman Schiff focused so much on. And if we have time, also a conversation about the foreign aid and the appropriateness of the president's hold. It really wasn't unprecedented, folks. Hopefully I have time to play that sound. But with just a couple of minutes left in this segment, I wanted to mention two other items for you. I know much of the media coverage and much of Washington, D.C. is focused in on this impeachment trial. And, you know, maybe to some extent, understandably so. But folks, the work for the American people continues. There are a lot of other issues that are important. I would just point out two of them. One of them we mentioned on Friday's broadcast, but the president became the first sitting president to attend the March for Life in person. We played for you some of that sound. Among other things, he said that every child is a precious and sacred gift from God. We are grateful to the president for attending. We are grateful to the administration for the actions they have taken on account of life. Second, folks, I don't know if you've seen, but the president is meeting with both Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and also the blue and white party leader Benny Gantz today, introducing his peace plan for the Middle East. Of course, we've outlined many times on this broadcast that this administration has been a strong ally for Israel. I think most of the media attention has been about the embassy move to Jerusalem, which was a wonderful, wonderful thing, but also the proclamation issuing the Israel sovereignty over the Golan Heights, and then their work at the United Nations. I can't tell you how many times we've had to come on this broadcast and talk about the last administration's failure to invoke a veto at the United Nations Security Council. This administration turned that on its head. So, folks, on both of those issues, the president attending the March for Life and then his meetings today unveiling a peace plan and continuing to stand by our strongest ally in the region, Israel, two great reasons for hope on this day. After this break, folks, we'll play a little bit more sound from Jay and we'll analyze the day ahead in the United States Senate.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We've been playing for you a lot of sound from Jay Sekulow and Pat Cipollone on the floor of the United States Senate from Saturday. Remember, this was just a two-hour session on Saturday. And as Jordan Sekulow joined us earlier in the broadcast said, it was just a preview of the more robust presentation that will be made today. But we're trying to play as much sound for you as possible so that you will be prepared for when today's procedures start right after we get off air, 1 p.m. Eastern time. I want to play for you now a very important, it's about 2 minutes long, comment from Jay on the floor of the Senate talking about this much-discussed meeting at the White House with President Zelensky and President Trump, where that meeting was going to take place, why President Zelensky wanted it, and the fact that President Trump wanted it as well. And I think for the first time, you got an honest description of what those conversations look like. You're going to hear more about it from Chairman Schiff and the others when they address the media. You certainly heard about it in the 23 hours they presented to the United States Senate. So I wanted you to hear this from Jay. It's Bite 5, about 2 minutes long, Saturday on the floor of the Senate.
House managers tried to tell you that the importance, remember the whole discussion, and my colleague, Mr. Papura, talked about this, between President Zelensky and President Trump and the bilateral meeting in the Oval Office at the White House. As if an article of impeachment could be based upon a meeting not taking place in the White House, but taking place someplace else, like the United Nations General Assembly, where it in fact did take place. Now, Dr. Fiona Hill was quite clear in saying that a White House meeting would supply the new Ukrainian government with the, quote, legitimacy it needed, especially vis-a-vis the Russians, and that Ukraine's viewed the White House meeting as a recognition of their legitimacy as a sovereign state. But here's what they did not play. Here's what they did not tell you. And I'm going to quote from Dr. Hill's testimony on page 145 of her transcript. These are her words. This is what she said under oath. It wasn't always a White House meeting per se, but definitely a presidential level meeting. You know, a meeting with Zelensky and the president. I mean, it could have taken place in Poland, in Warsaw. It could have been, you know, a proper bilateral in some other context. But in other words, a White House level presidential meeting. That can be found on page 145. And contrary to what Manager Schiff and some of the other managers told you, is this meeting did in fact occur. It occurred at the UN General Assembly on September 25th, 2019. Those were the words of Dr. Hill that you did not hear.
Wes, I want to come to you on this. This was something that was not laid out in the House manager's case. They acted like maybe a meeting never took place or it was only about a meeting in the Oval Office. Dr. Fiona Hill, their star witness, Chairman Schiff's star witness, specifically said in her deposition that this was always about a White House level meeting. She even said it could happen in Poland or in Warsaw or a bilateral in some other context. Wes, a bilateral meeting in some other context, that is literally exactly what a meeting between President Trump and President Zelensky at the United Nations General Assembly would be described as. And guess what? That meeting took place.
Absolutely. You know, and the Democrat House managers in their presentations, you know, it was replete with incompleteness. They ignored and edited out evidence that damaged, you know, the credibility of their own arguments. And not only that, they made much of the fact, well, it took place at the United Nations, but that the president refused to go to Poland and sent Vice President Pence instead to meet with Zelensky in Poland, failing to note, you know, again, this incomplete information, failing to note that the President Trump was supposed to go, but there was a massive hurricane in the United States. He elected, as he should, to stay home, to take care of emergency matters with a hurricane that was threatening the lives of Americans. And only because of that did he not meet him initially in Poland. All of this kind of information they failed to present to the Senate.
Folks, I really thought the president's team did a great job doing a handful of things during this two-hour presentation. They countered facts or factual admissions, as Wes points out. They corrected the record when it was only partially filled by the House managers. You know, there's always context to these things, and I thought the president's team did a good job filling in those holes and then also beginning the assertive case that they will continue today and build out over the hours ahead. Folks, just a few minutes left in the broadcast, but there is one more soundbite from Jay on the floor of the Senate from Saturday that I wanted to play for you, and I think it's important, especially given our view of the United States Constitution. I'm going to go to Professor Hutchison after I play this bite, because you really do have to look at words rather than try to assert motive or ascribe motive to the people who are speaking them. This is Bite 12, Jay Sekulow on the floor of the United States Senate this past Saturday.
And then there was Mr. Schiff saying yesterday, maybe we can learn a lot more from our Ukrainian ally. Let me read you what our Ukrainian ally said. President Zelensky, when asked about these allegations of quid pro quo, he said, I think you read everything. I think you read the text. He says, we had a good phone call. These are his words. It was normal. We spoke about many things. I think, and you read it, that nobody pushed me. They think you can read minds. I think you look at the words.
Harry, they think you can read minds. I think you look at words. I would just say this. The transcript, the readout of that call from January 25th, we read every single word of it on air. I'm holding the transcript in my hands. When you try a case, Harry, you have to look at evidence. Words have meanings. You don't have to ascribe motives. You can just look at the words.
I think you're correct. The Democrats are majoring in one field and one field only. That is the field of mind reading. And the record contradicts them. And so I think Jay's summation was very, very good. The Democrats claim a corrupt motive. But in order for the corrupt motive to really exist, this corrupt idea has to be communicated to someone. And it is clear beyond question that there was no corruption, A, in the transcript, and number two, it's clear that President Zelensky felt no pressure. So you put those two things together, and it destroys Adam Schiff's narrative. Adam Schiff, keep in mind, has been looking to impeach this president for at least 3 years. He majored in claiming that there was a collusion narrative supporting connections between Russia and the Trump campaign. That blew up in his face. And I think the current narrative will also blow up in his face, and it should.
Folks, if you're going to conduct a fair trial, it should be based on evidence. The primary evidence that underlies this case was released by the President of the United States, yet the House managers did not focus primarily on it. I think that will change in just a few minutes here when the President's team again takes to the floor of the U.S. Senate. Again, up to today and tomorrow to finish their case, up to 22 hours remaining. As we heard earlier in the broadcast, Jordan says that Jay is first up out of the gates, so you're going to want to tune in. We'll be back with you tomorrow on Jay Sekulow Live.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.